Welcome back to the Jeff Porch Show at FM Talk 106.5. Hope everyone's doing well on this Thursday morning. Still to come on the program, State Representative Wes Allen will be with us, so you want to stay tuned for that. Also, from Alabama Political Reporter, one and only Josh Moon will give us a Democrat response. That to come, so hopefully you can stay with us. Joining us now on the line, always a pleasure to bring on my next guest. He represents the fine folks in the 3rd Congressional District, Congressman Mike Rogers. Congressman, how are you this morning?
I'm doing great. Hope you are.
Hey, thanks for making time for us. Just first off, your reaction to last night's vice presidential debate, your former colleague, Mike Pence.
Yeah, Mike's been a longtime friend, and I knew he was going to do exceptionally well, and that's exactly what he did. He's a very articulate, very smart fella, so I was not surprised at all at how well he performed.
Yeah, and former talk radio show host, really had a command of the policy. Not that that is the important, at least in the eyes of the media, but really a guy I thought that showed, you know, being a heartbeat away from the presidency, you would have some confidence in.
Absolutely, and that came across, and I was very proud of him.
Let's move on to presidential politics. November 3rd, right around the corner. Are you feeling how is the mood in your neck of the woods, and how do you feel about Trump coming up on November 3rd?
Well, the mood in my neck of the woods is, you know, they love Donald Trump. I mean, this guy's walking on water in my district. Folks in my district are very interested in the Supreme Court nomination. They very much want to see confirmation of Judge Barrett before the November election, and that's kind of been the thing that's been talked about the most since that the passing of Justice Ginsburg. But you know, I don't believe at all that these polls, these national polls, these are the same people that said Donald Trump wasn't going to win in 2016. I have evidence in my district, but also I'm hearing from my colleagues around the country that his base is just as fired up to see him get reelected, if not more fired up than they were in 2016. So I'm pretty optimistic that we're going to have another big night on November the 3rd, like we did back in 2016, where the world is shocked at how well he does. And you know, I think that the future of the House of Representatives is tied to his election. He has a good night, we're going to take the majority back, meaning the Republicans. If he doesn't, the Democrats and Nancy Pelosi will continue to control the House.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's almost the way these election experts talk about it. They're almost dismissive of the chances of getting the House back. But if I recall, in 16, it was everything was looking like it was going to go the other direction, that you could lose the House, that you could lose the Senate. And we wake up on the day after the election, and Republicans have all three.
Yeah, but you know, you got to keep in mind, I've done some TV interviews this morning, and I told them the same thing I'm telling you. You know, when it comes to local press, whether it's print, broadcast, and statewide, we get a fair deal in this state. And I've always felt that way. But when it comes to the national mainstream media, they are completely in bed with the Democrats. They're very liberal, and their goal is to try to dampen the enthusiasm of Republican voters. Oh, it's over with. There's no sense. To make everybody think it's inevitable that Hillary Clinton's going to be the next president, and that Chuck Schumer's going to be running the Senate, Nancy Pelosi's going to be running the House. So they perpetuate that theory, hoping it will make it a reality, become a self-fulfilling prophecy. It didn't work in 2016, and it's not going to work this time. And I would remind your listeners that when we did lose the House in 2018, it's because we didn't have Donald Trump on the ticket. That was a midterm election. His voters didn't come out, and we narrowly lost 31 seats. Every one of those seats, we lost by less than 3,000 votes per district. So he's going to be back on the ticket. I think it's going to help us get the majority of those seats back, and I hope that we retake the House.
It's how thin that margin was, and just how close getting the House back really is. It gets missed. But in addition to that, you know, the the Democrats, if Donald Trump was as bad as the media and the Democrats have told us, it seems like 2018 should have been such a much bigger year for them, right? They shouldn't have lost seats in the Senate, and they should have gotten more gains in the House based on that oversell in 18, which they still did well. Don't get me wrong, they got the House, but not as well as they maybe could have. You got to look at that and put that side by side with 2020, and there is reason for optimism.
Yeah, there's two things I'd point out. One is in 2018, we also had a problem with female voters that are now in a different place because all this violence in these cities. These were suburban females. The 31 seats we lost were in suburbs around big cities. And the reason we lost them primarily was women were dissatisfied with the way the president handled himself, the way he communicated. Well, now they're really unhappy with all this violence in the cities, and they're worried about it spilling over into the suburbs, and they're very turned off by it. So I don't think they're going to reward Democrats who are leading these cities and states where this is happening, and they'll gravitate to the president who's talking a strong law and order theme in his campaign. The other thing I would point out, and I found this in my district and what happens all over the country, this is my 10th term that I'm running for, and we've seen this phenomenon happen over and over again. When the president's on the ticket, whether it's, you know, George W. Bush, Barack Obama, Donald Trump, there's about 250,000 people that vote in my election. In the midterms, when the governor's at the top of the ticket, the governor's race, about 175,000. And that's true across the nation. There's some people that just only come out when the president's campaign's on the ballot. So when you look at those 31 seats that we lost, it was because the presidential race wasn't on the ticket. I truly believe that having the presidential race back on the ticket is going to change the dynamic in a lot of races that were very narrowly lost in the last election. So there's a lot of reason for optimism. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. You know, we've still got to run across the finish line. But I can tell you from our polling around the country, the playing field is much better for us now than it was in 2018.
Yeah, you know, something else that gets missed, 2016 was kind of a unique time, but it seemed like a presidential election almost a presidential campaign, the Trump campaign, maybe not as versed in the rigors of a national campaign. This time around, it looks like there's a lot more parts and pieces in place, that this looks more like a traditional presidential campaign, and maybe that pays dividends up and down the ballot.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, because I wonder if that's going to make a big change on November 3rd. Let's talk about what's going on Capitol Hill, the on again, off again nature of COVID-19 negotiations. Nancy Pelosi just now giving a press conference. What do you make of that? Is there any reason to be thinking that something will happen before the election?
Yeah, I think so. You know, she really does not want to have a deal before the election because she believes that the more distressed the country's in, the better it plays for taking Donald Trump out. But she's getting enormous pressure from those 31 members I told you about and some other members who are getting a lot of pressure back in their districts to get something done. And, you know, she's got to worry about getting thrown overboard. So that's why I think she's back at the table. I think she was offering outrageous demands. I know she was. And my theory was it's because she didn't want a deal. She's in a safe seat. She's not worried about getting beat. But she's got a bunch of folks that are on her back. And I think that's why she's back at the table now trying to get something done.
I mean, every time we talk, we always talk about the potential for turmoil within the Democratic caucus. It's just like Pelosi, you know, that internal politics of the Democrat side of the House doesn't get a lot of attention because everything else going on, but she really does have to walk a fine line in keeping her members in order.
Yeah. John Boehner had the exact same problem when we were in the majority. Paul Ryan had the same problem with the Freedom Caucus. You know, they were always very unhappy and disgruntled and just made their life miserable. Well, now she's got AOC and Tlaib and Omar and a bunch of other socialists that are way to her left, threatening her all the time. So, you know, it's just it's a fine line she's got to walk, and I'm not sure she's going to be able to be successful. That's why John Boehner left, and that's why Paul Ryan left. They just finally got sick of it.
joined by Congressman Mike Rogers of Alabama's 3rd Congressional District. On the COVID front, we talk about China, and it was brought up in the debate last night. Do you, as the ranking member on the Homeland Security Committee, that, you know, this time around, we took care of business with COVID-19. What if there's another one of these? What happens next? How do you confront that challenge with these infectious diseases maybe coming from abroad?
Well, obviously, if something happens next year, we're much better prepared to know what to do because we just went through it. But, you know, I don't think it'll be as bad as this simply because we will be better prepared. I do think that we're going to have to do a very good job next year of passing legislation and economic packages to incentivize the repatriation and manufacturing of a lot of things that we need in a pandemic, like PPE, like respirators, like pharmaceuticals that we have allowed to go to China and other countries, mainly China. We need to get that stuff back here, and that's going to take some incentives. And in order to put those incentives in a package, we have to have legislation. So that's one lesson I think we've learned, and we're going to have to get after it. But, you know, one of the problems we've got is we're not back in session. We're, because of this pandemic, we're staying away and not getting legislation done.
Do you think there's going to be the will, win or lose, for Republicans to do something about any of these threats from the Chinese?
No, absolutely. This is one thing that you're seeing a lot of, or you're not seeing it because we're not up there, but there's a lot of bipartisanship on this issue. China has really stepped in it with the way they've handled this, and it's exposed a lot of raw feelings on our part and the rest of the world. It's not unique to us. The rest of the world feels the same way.
Yeah, but I guess maybe it's because it's a political season. The Democrats want Trump to take the fall for COVID-19. That, very early on we were talking about getting China to pay for this. There's all of this discussion about things like that. It kind of seems like it's been put on the back burner. At least maybe that's just a product of who's in control of the media. But is that you do see some action being taken on that at some point?
Yeah, we just finished a China study. It just was released last week up there. Very thorough report on what China's been doing, and it's being circulated. You're going to see legislation come out of it. I mean, this stuff can't happen fast. And right now, everybody's just hearing about what's going on in the election. Once the election's over, no matter who wins, I think you're going to see when we go back in early next year, this is going to be one of the priority areas that we work on. And that's trying to figure out how we lessen our reliance on China, but also penalize their bad behavior.
Yeah, well, the American economy, so, you know, are you able to really decouple the American economy at this point? It seems like it's a much bigger, more complex problem, and now having to deal with that at this point in time with a pandemic, it's all a lot at once for a lot of people.
That's exactly, you just nailed it right there. That's the deal. We got to get past this pandemic, and then when we do, we got to get to attending to business when it comes to China. And I'm confident we're going to do that in a bipartisan fashion.
And the talk about a vaccine, obviously, you being kept up on that. Do you feel like we hear from the president? Do you feel like that's going to be the case, that we're really right around the corner to a vaccine?
We really are. I mean, I 2 weeks ago, Secretary Azar came in and briefed the Republican whip team. I'm on the Republican whip team. Whip team was Steve Scalise. And he brought in the head of the FDA and Secretary Azar and another fellow who I can't remember what agency he was with. But they're the leaders in this vaccine development. And they walked through everything they've done since the beginning of the year. And we literally have three separate vaccines that are in phase three, which means the first two phases just prove that they're safe, they don't hurt anybody, whatever. The phase that they're in now, and we have thousands of people that have been in this phase they're studying. They have several thousand take the vaccine, several thousand take placebo to see which one works best. And it could be any day, it could be a couple of 3 weeks from now, but they're going to get one of those approved. They have already manufactured millions of these doses of all three, so that whichever one's approved first, we immediately going to start dispersing those vaccines. And, you know, what, when I came away from that, all I kept, I went to Steve's police and told him this, and I told Kevin McCarthy, we need to get Secretary Azar on television telling the American people what he told us. He's very articulate, very competent, very impressive. Have the FDA administrator there talk about the safety process, make sure everybody knows there's no political pressure. But we have a pandemic, a global pandemic, and we need to get a vaccine out. But they, what they have accomplished over the last 11 months is absolutely phenomenal, because it usually takes 10 to 14 years to get where they are now. And because President Trump has given them all the resources they need and taken all the red tape out of the process, we have not cut any corners, but we have been able to get this done. And it's very impressive and very exciting. And there's no doubt it's going to be, one of them is going to be approved before the end of the year, but it could be between now and the election. But I can say this, the election has no bearing on when or whether they approve one of these vaccines.
Yeah, it's just a matter of getting the confidence to have confidence. The public have a confidence in the vaccine, it sounds like. Congressman, we're out of time. Up against a break here, but I do want to thank you for making time for us down here in South Alabama this morning.
Glad to do it. Take care.
That was Congressman Mike Rogers on the line. We got to get another break in. We'll be right back. This is FN Talk 106.5.
I know when to run. You never count your money. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for counting when the dealing's done. Every gambler knows